Starless Night, Chapter 9, Caged. Plodding along a slow and rocky trail, they had to walk the horses more than ride them. Every passing inch tormented Catterby. She had seen the light of a campfire the previous night and knew in her heart that it had to be Drizzt. She had gone straight to her horse, meaning to saddle up and head out, using the light as a beacon to the drow, but Fret had stopped her, explaining that the magical horseshoes that their mounts wore did not protect the beasts from exhaustion. He reminded her, too, of the dangers she would likely encounter in the mountains at night. Catterby had gone back to her own fire then, thoroughly miserable. She considered calling for Gwenhiver and sending the panther out for Drizzt, but shook the notion away. The campfire was just a dot somewhere on the higher trails many miles away, and she had no way of knowing, rationally, that it was indeed Drizzt. Now, though, crossing along the higher trails, making their steady but painfully slow way in that very same direction, Catterby feared that she had erred. She watched Fret, scratching his white beard, looking this way and that at the unremarkable landscape, and wished they had that campfire to guide them.
"We will get there,"
the tidy dwarf often said to her, looking back into her disgusted expression. Morning turned into afternoon. Long shadows drifted across the landscape.
"We must make camp,"
Fret announced as twilight descended.
"We're going on," Catterby argued. "If that was Drizzt's fire, then he's a day up on us already, no matter for your magical horseshoes." "I cannot hope to find the cave in the darkness," the dwarf retorted. "We could find a giant or a troll, perhaps, and I'm sure that many wolves will be about, but a cave?"
Looking into Catterby's deepening scowl, Fret began to ponder the wisdom of his sarcasm.
"Oh, all right," the tidy dwarf cried. "We will keep looking until the night is full."
They pressed on, until Catterby could hardly see her horse walking beside her, and Fret's pony nearly stumbled over the edge of a ravine. Finally, even stubborn Catterby had to relent and agree to make camp. After they had settled in, she went and found a tree, a tall pine, and climbed nearly to its top to keep her vigil. If the light of a campfire came up, the young woman determined, she would set out, or at least would send the panther. There were no campfires that night. As soon as the dawn's light permitted, the two set off again, barely an hour out. Fret clapped his clean hands together excitedly, thinking that he had found a familiar trail.
"We are not far," he promised.
Up and down went the trail, into rocky, tree-filled valleys, and up again across bare, wind-swept stone. Fret tethered his pony to a tree branch and led the way up the steep side of one mound, telling Catterby that they had found the place, only to discover, 2 hours of climbing later, that they had scaled the wrong mountain. In mid-afternoon, they discovered that Fret's earlier promise that they were not far was accurate. When he had made that statement, the cave the dwarf sought was no more than half a mile from their location. But finding a specific cave in mountain territory is no easy task, even for a dwarf, and Fret had been to the place only once, nearly 20 years before. He found it, finally, as the shadows again grew long in the mountains. Catterby shook her head as she examined the entrance and the fire pit that had been used 2 nights before. The embers had been tended with great care, such as a ranger might do.
"He was here," the young woman said to the dwarf, 2 nights ago.
Catterby rose from the fire pit and brushed her thick auburn locks back from her face, eyeing the dwarf as though he was to blame. She looked out from the cave, back across the mountains, to where they had been, to the location from which they had seen this very fire.
"We could not have gotten here that night," the dwarf answered. "You could have run off or ridden off into the darkness with all speed, and the firelight would have shown us through,"
Catterby interrupted.
"For how long?" the dwarf demanded. "We found one vantage point, one hole through the towering peaks. As soon as we went into a ravine or crossed close to the side of a mountain, the light would have been lost to us. Then where would we be, stubborn daughter of Brunner?"
Again, Catterby's scowl stopped the dwarf short. He sighed profoundly and threw up his hands. He was right, Catterby knew. While they had gone no more than a few miles deeper into the mountains since that night, the trails had been treacherous, climbing and descending, winding snake-like around the many rocky peaks. She and the dwarf had walked a score of miles at least to get to this point, and even if she had summoned Gwenhyber, there was no way the panther could have caught up to Drizzt. That logic did little to quell the frustration boiling within Caterbury. She had vowed to follow Drizzt, to find him and bring him home. But now, standing at the edge of a forlorn cave in a wild place, she faced the entrance to the Underdark.
"We will go back to Lady Elestriel," Fred said to her. "Perhaps she has some allies. She has many of those who will be better able to locate the drow."
"What are you saying?" Caterby wanted to know.
"It was a valiant chase," Fret replied. "Your father will be proud of your effort, but..."
Caterby rushed up to the dwarf, pushed him aside, and stumbled down toward the back of the cave, toward the blackness of a descending tunnel entrance. She stubbed her toe hard against a jag in the floor, but refused to cry out, even to grunt, not wanting Fret to think her ridiculous. In fumbling with her pack, though, trying to get to her tinderbox, lantern, and oil, Caterbury thought herself so, just the same.
"Do you know that she likes you?"
Fret asked casually. The question stopped the young woman. She looked back to regard the dwarf, who was just a short, dark silhouette before the lighter gray of the outside night.
"Elestriel, I mean,"
Fret clarified. Caterbury had no answer. She hadn't felt comfortable around the magnificent lady of Silvery Moon, far from it. Intentionally or not, Elestriel had made her feel perfectly insignificant.
"She does," Fret insisted. "She likes you and admires you."
"In an orc's thoughts,"
Caterbury huffed. She thought she was being mocked.
"You remind her of her sister,"
Fret went on, without missing a beat.
"Dove Falconhand, a spirited woman, if ever there was one."
Caterbury did not reply this time. She had heard many tales of Elestriel's sister, a legendary ranger, and had indeed fancied herself somewhat like Dove. Suddenly, the dwarf's claims did not seem so outrageous.
"Alas for Elestriel,"
Fret remarked.
"She wishes that she could be more like you." "In an orc's thoughts,"
Caterbury blurted, unable to stop herself. The notion that Elestriel, the fabulous lady of Silvery Moon, could be the least bit jealous of Caterbury seemed absurd.
"In a human's thoughts, I say,"
Fret replied.
"What is it about your race that none of you can seem to properly weigh your own value? Every human seems to think more of herself than she should, or less of herself than is sensible. Elestriel likes you, I say, even admires you. If she did not, if she thought you and your plans were silly, then why would she go to this trouble? Why would she send me, a valuable sage, along with you? And why, daughter of Brunner Battlehammer, would she give you this?"
He lifted one hand, holding something delicate that Caterbury could not make out. She paused a moment to digest what he had said, then walked back over to him. The dwarf held a fine silver chain, a circlet headdress with a gemstone set into it.
"It is beautiful,"
Caterbury admitted, studying the pale green gem, a line of black running through its center.
"More than beautiful,"
Fret said, and he motioned for Caterbury to put it on. She clasped it in place, the gem set against the middle of her forehead. Then she nearly swooned, for the images around her suddenly blurred and wavered. She could see the dwarf, not just his silhouette, but actually Fret's features. She glanced about in disbelief, focusing on the back of the cave. It seemed as if she was bathed in starlight, not brightly, but Caterbury could make out the jags and the nooks clearly enough. Caterbury could not see it, of course, but the thin black line along the middle of the gemstone had widened like a pupil.
"Walking into the Underdark under a blazing torch is not the wisest move,"
Fret remarked.
"A single candle could mark you as out of place and would leave you vulnerable. And how much oil could you carry in any case? Your lantern would be useless to you before the first day had ended. The cat's eye eliminates that need, you see."
"Cat's eye?"
"Cat's eye agate,"
Fret explained, pointing to the gemstone.
"Elestriel did the enchanting herself. Normally, a gem ensorcelled such would show you only shades of gray, but the lady does favor starlight. Few in the realms could claim the honor of receiving such a gift."
Caterbury nodded and didn't know how to reply. Pangs of guilt accompanied her scrutiny of her feelings for the Lady of Silvery Moon, and she thought herself ridiculous for ever doubting and for ever allowing jealousy to cloud her judgment.
I was instructed to try to dissuade you from the dangerous course, the dwarf went on. But Alustriel knew that I would fail. You are indeed so like Dove, headstrong and stubborn, and feeling positively immortal. She knew that you would go even into the Underdark, Fred said. And, though Alustriel fears for you, she knows that nothing could or should stop you.
The dwarf's tone was neither sarcastic nor demeaning, and again Catterby was caught off guard, unprepared for the words.
"Will you stay the night in the cave?" Fred asked. "I could start a fire."
Catterby shook her head. Drizzt was already too far ahead.
"Of course," the tidy dwarf muttered quietly.
Catterby didn't hear him. She was already walking toward the back of the cave, toward the tunnel. She paused and summoned Gwenhyber, realizing that she would need the panther's support to get going. As the cat materialized, Catterby looked back to the cave entrance to tell the dwarf to relay her thanks to Alustriel. But Fret was already gone.
"Come along, Gwen,"
the young woman said, a strained smile on her face.
"We have to find Drizzt."
The panther poked about the tunnel entrance for a bit, then started down, apparently on the trail. Catterby paused a long moment, staring back to the cave entrance and the starry sky behind. She wondered if she would ever see those stars again.
Bonus chapter.
Chapter 10. Old Friends. He crossed through narrow tunnels and halls that spread beyond vision to either side and above. He trotted along muddy flats and bare stone, without splashes, without sound. Every step Drizzt Du'Arden took in the deeper tunnels of the Underdark jogged his memory a little bit more, brought him back to the days when he had survived the wilds, when he had been the hunter. He had to find that inner being, that primal savage within him, that heard the calls of his instincts so very well. This was no time for rational calculations. In the wilds of the Underdark, there was only time to act. Drizzt hated the prospect of giving in to that savage element, hated this whole journey, but he had to go on, knowing that if he failed, if he was killed in the wilds before he ever got to Menza Baranzan, his quest would prove detrimental to his friends. Then he would be gone, but the Dark Elves would not know it and would still go after Mithril Hall. For the sake of Brunner, Regis, and dear Catterby, Drizzt had to go on and had to become the primal hunter once more. He climbed to the ceiling of a high corridor for his first break and slept lightly, hanging upside down, his legs wedged up to the knees in a narrow crack, his fingers hooked under his belt near his scimitars. An echo down a distant tunnel woke him after only an hour of dozing. It had been a slight sound, a step into sucking mud perhaps, but Drizzt held perfectly still, sensing the disturbance in the still air, hearing minute residual echoes and correctly guessing the direction. He pulled out his legs and rolled, dropping the 15 feet to the ground, the toes of his soft boots touching first to absorb the impact and bring him down without a whisper. He ran on, taking care to keep far from those echoes, desiring no more conflicts before he got to the Drow City. He grew more confident with every step. His instincts were returning, along with his memories of that time he spent alone in the wilds of the Underdark. He came to another muddy area, where the air was warm and the sound of hot, aerated water hissed and gurgled. Wet, gleaming stalagmite and stalactites, glowing warm to the drow's heat-sensing eyes, dotted the area, breaking this single tunnel into a virtual maze. Drizzt knew this place, remembered it from the journey he had taken to the surface. That fact brought both relief and trepidation to the drow. He was glad that he was on course, but he could not deny his fear that he was on course. He let the water sound guide him along, knowing that he would find the proper tunnels just beyond the hot springs. The air grew steadily warmer, soon uncomfortably so, but Drizzt kept his cloak on and drawn tight, not wanting to get caught up with anything more than a scimitar in his hands in this dangerous area. And the drow knew that this was indeed a dangerous area. Any number of monsters might be crouched behind one of the ever-present mounts, and it took great effort for Drizzt to move silently through the thickening mud. If he kept his foot in one position for any length of time, the clinging stuff ran up around his boot, and subsequently lifting the gummed foot would inevitably result in a sucking sound. On one such occasion, Drizzt paused as he slowly hoisted his foot, trying to discern the echo patterns. It took only a moment for him to understand that the responding sounds he had heard were made by more feet than his own. Drizzt quickly surveyed the area and considered the air temperature and the intensity of the stalagmite's glow. The footsteps grew louder, and Drizzt realized that a band of more than a few approached. He scanned every side tunnel, quickly coming to the conclusion that this band carried no light source. Drizzt moved under one narrow spike of a stalactite, its tip hanging no more than 4 feet from the floor. He tucked his legs under him and knelt beneath the thing. He positioned his cloak about his knees in a conical fashion, taking care so that there was no obvious jags, like a foot sticking out too far, along his body. Then the drow looked up to the stalactite, studied its form. He lifted his hands to feel its tip, then ran them up and around the stalactite, joining with it smoothly, making sure that its tip remained the smallest taper. He closed his eyes and tucked his head between his upper arms. He swayed a few times, feeling his balance, smoothing the outer edges of his form. Drizzt became a stalagmite mound. He soon heard sucking sounds and squeaking, croaking voices that he knew to be goblins all about him. He peeked out only once, and only for an instant, ensuring that they had no light sources. How obvious he would be if a torch passed near him. But hiding in the lightless underdark was very different from hiding in a forest, even on a dark night. The trick here was to blur the distinctive lines of body heat, and Drizzt felt confident that the air about him, and the stalagmite, was at least as warm as his outer cloak. He heard goblin footsteps barely a few feet away, knew that the large troop, it numbered at least 20, Drizzt believed, was all about him. He considered the exact movements it would take for him to get his hands most quickly to his scimitars. If one of the goblins brushed against him, the game would be up, and he would explode into motion, ripping at their ranks and trying to get behind them before they even realized that he was there. It never came to that. The goblin troop continued on its way through the host of stalactites and stalagmites and the one drow that was not a mound of rock. Drizzt opened his lavender eyes, which blazed with the inner fires of the hunter. He remained perfectly still for a few moments longer to ensure that there was no stragglers. Then he ran off, making not a sound. Catterby knew immediately that Drizzt had killed this six-legged, tentacled, panther-like beast. Kneeling over the carcass, she recognized the curving, slashing wounds and doubted that anyone else could have made so clean a kill. "It was Drizzt," she muttered to Gwenhyber, and the panther gave a low growl. "No more than 2 days old." This dead monster reminded her of how vulnerable she might be. If Drizzt, with all his training in stealth and in the ways of the Underdark, had been forced into combat, then how could she hope to pass unscathed? Catterby leaned against the Black Panther's muscled flank, needing the support. She couldn't keep Gwenhyber with her for much longer, she knew. The magical cat was a creature of the astral plane and needed to return there often to rest. Catterby had meant to spend her first hour in the tunnel alone, had meant to leave the cave without the panther beside her. But her nerve had waned with the first few steps. She needed the tangible support of her feline ally in this foreign place. As the day had gone on, Catterby had become somewhat more comfortable with her surroundings and had planned to dismiss Gwenhyber as soon as the trail became more obvious, as soon as they found a region with fewer side passages. It seemed that they had found that place, but they had found, too, the carcass. Catterby started ahead quickly, instructing Gwenhyber to keep close to her side. She knew that she should release the panther then, not tax Gwenhyber's strength in case she should need the cat in an emergency. But she justified her delay by convincing herself that many carrion monsters or other six-legged feline beasts might be about. 20 minutes later, with the tunnels dark and quiet around them, the young woman stopped and searched for her strength. Dismissing Gwenhyber then was among the most courageous things Catterby had ever done. And when the mist dissolved and Catterby replaced the statuette into her pouch, she was glad indeed for the gift Elustriel had given her. She was alone in the Underdark, alone in deep tunnels filled with deadly foes. She could see, at least, and the starry illusion, beautiful even here against the gray stone, bolstered her spirits. Catterby took a deep breath and steadied herself. She remembered Wulfgar and spoke again her vow that no other friends would be lost. Drizzt needed her. She could not let her fears defeat her. She took up the heart-shaped locket, holding it tightly in her hand so that its magical warmth would keep her on the proper path. She set off again, forcing one foot in front of the other as she moved farther from the world of the sun. Drizzt quickened his pace after the hot springs, for he now remembered the way, and remembered, too, many of the enemies he had taken care to avoid. Days passed uneventfully, became a 10-day, and then 2 for the running drow. It had taken Drizzt more than a month to get to the surface from Blingdenstone, the gnome city some 40 to 50 miles west of Menzoberranzan, and now, with his belief that danger was pressing Mithril Hall, he was determined to shorten that time. He came into tunnels winding and narrow, found a familiar fork in the trail, one corridor cutting north and one continuing to the west. Drizzt suspected that the northern route would take him more quickly to the drow city, but he stayed the course west, hoping that he might gain more information along that more familiar route, and secretly hoping that he might find some old friends along the way. He was still running a couple of days later, but he now paused often and put his ear to the stone, listening for a rhythmic tap-tapping sound. Blingdenstone was not far away, Drizzt knew, and deep gnome miners might well be about. The halls remained silent, though, and Drizzt began to realize that he did not have much time. He thought of going straight into the gnome city, but decided against that course. He'd spent too long on the road already. It was time to draw near to Menzoberranzan. An hour later, cautiously rounding a bend in a low corridor that was lined with glowing lichen, Drizzt's keen ears caught a distant noise. At first, the drow smiled, thinking that he had found the elusive miners, but as he continued to listen, catching the sounds of metal scraping metal, even a cry, his expression greatly changed. A battle was raging not so far away. Drizzt sprinted off, using the increasingly loud echoes to guide his steps. He came into one dead end and had to backtrack, but soon was on course again, scimitars drawn. He came to a fork in the corridor, both tunnels continuing on in a similar direction, though one rose sharply, and both resounding with the cries of battle. Drizzt decided to go up, running, crouching. Around a bend he spotted an opening and knew that he'd come upon the fight. He eased out of the tunnel, moving onto a ledge 20 feet above a wide chamber, its floor broken and dotted with stone mounds. Below, Svefnebli and drow forms scrambled all about. Svefnebli and drow. Drizzt fell back against the wall, his scimitar slipping down to his sides. He knew that the Svefnebli, the deep gnomes, were not evil. Understood in his heart that the drow had been the ones to instigate this fight, probably laying an ambush for the gnomes' mining party. Drizzt's heart screamed at him to leap down to aid the sorely pressed gnomes, but he could not find the strength. He had fought drow, had killed drow, but never with a clear conscience. These were his kin, his blood. Might there be another Zach Nefane down there, another Drizzt Duarden? One dark elf, in hot pursuit of a wounded gnome, scrambled up the side of a rocky mound, only to find that it had become a living rock, an earth elemental, ally of the gnomes. Great stony arms wrapped about the dark elf and crushed him, the elemental taking no notice of the weapons that nicked harmlessly off its natural rocky armor. Drizzt winced at the gruesome sight, but was somewhat relieved to see the gnomes holding their own. The elemental slowly turned about, smashing down a blocking stalagmite and tearing its great chunks of feet from the stone floor. The gnomes rallied behind their giant ally, trying to reform some semblance of ranks amid the general chaos. They were making progress, many of them zigzagging through the rocky maze to link up with their mounting central force, and the dark elves inevitably fell back from the dangerous giant. One burly gnome, a burrow warden, Drizzt guessed, called for a straight march across the cavern. Drizzt crouched low on the ledge. From his vantage point, he could see the skilled drow warriors fanning out about the gnomes, flanking and hiding behind mounds. Another group slipped toward the far exit, the gnomes' destination, and took up strategic positions there. If the elemental held out, though, the gnomes would likely punch their way through, and once into the corridor, they could put their elemental behind them to block the way and run on to Blingdenstone. 3 drow females stepped out to confront the giant. Drizzt sighed, seeing that they wore the unmistakable spider-emblazoned robes of Loth worshippers. He recognized that they were priestesses, possibly high priestesses, and knew then that the gnomes would not escape. One after another, the females chanted and threw their hands out in front of them, sending forth a spray of fine mist. As the moisture hit the rocky elemental, the giant began to dissolve, streaks of mud replacing the solid stone. The priestesses kept up their chants, their assaults. On came the rocky giant, growing with rage, its features distorted by the slipping mud. A blast of mist hit it squarely, sending a thick line of mud running down the monster's chest.
but the priestess who had made the assault was too concerned with her attack and did not back up fast enough. A rock arm shot out and punched her, breaking bones and hurling her through the air to crash against a stalagmite. The remaining two drow hit the elemental again, dissolving its legs, and it crashed helplessly to the floor. It began to reform its appendages immediately, but the priestesses continued their deadly spray. Seeing that the ally was lost, the gnome leader called for a charge, and the Srifnebli rushed on, overwhelming one priestess before the flanking dark elves closed in like a biting maw. The fight was on in full again, this time right below Drisduarden. He gasped for breath as he witnessed the spectacle, saw a gnome slashed repeatedly by three drow to fall, screaming, dying, to the floor. Drizzt was out of excuses. He knew right from wrong, knew the significance of the appearance of Loth's priestesses. Fires simmered in his lavender eyes. Out came his scimitars, twinkle flaring to blue glowing life. He spotted the remaining priestess down to the left. She stood beside a tall, narrow mound, one arm out, touching a Srifneblin. The gnome made no moves against her, only stood and groaned, trembling from the priestess's magical assaults. Black energy crackled up the drow female's arm as she literally sucked the life force from her unfortunate victim. Driz tucked Twinkle under his other arm and leaped out, hooking the top of the narrow mound and rotating about it as he quickly descended. He hit the floor right beside the priestess and snapped his weapons back to the ready. The startled drow female uttered a series of sharp commands, apparently thinking Drizzt an ally. Twinkle dived into her heart. The half-drained gnome eyed Drizzt curiously, then fainted away. Drizzt ran on, calling out warnings to the gnomes in their own tongue that dark elves were in position near the far exit. The ranger took care to keep out of the open, though, realizing that a gnome he encountered would likely attack him, and any drow he encountered might recognize him. He tried not to think of what he had just done, tried not to think of the female's eyes, so similar to his sister Verna's. He rushed in hard and put his back against a mound, the cries of battle all about him. A gnome jumped out from behind another stalagmite, waving a hammer dangerously, and before Drizzt could explain that he was no enemy, another drow came around the side to stand shoulder to shoulder with Drizzt. The suddenly hesitant gnome looked about, looked for an escape route, but the newest opponent leaped at him. Purely on instinct, Drizzt slashed the drow's weapon arm, his scimitar drawing a deep gash. The ebon-skinned warrior dropped his sword and half turned to look back in horror at this drow who was not an ally. Stumbling, the surprised drow focused ahead, just in time to catch a gnomish hammer in the face. The gnome didn't understand it, of course, and as the dark elf fell, all he thought about was readying his hammer for the second enemy. But Drizzt was long gone. With the priestesses down, a gnome shaman ran over to the felled elemental. He placed a stone atop a pile of rubble and crushed it with his mattock, then began chanting. Soon the elemental reformed as large as ever and lumbered away like a moving avalanche in search of enemies. The shaman watched it go, but he should have been watching his own situation instead, for another dark elf crept out behind him, mace held high for a killing strike. The shaman realized the danger only as the mace came crashing down and was intercepted by a scimitar. Drizzt shoved the shaman aside and stood face to face with the stunned drow. "Friend?" the fingers of the drow's free hand quickly asked. Drizzt shook his head, then sent Twinkle slamming against the drow's mace, batting it aside. The ranger's second scimitar quickly followed the same path, ringing loudly off the metal mace and knocking it far out to Drizzt's left. Drizzt's advantage of surprise was not as great as he had supposed, though, for the drow's free hand had already slipped to his belt and grabbed a slender dirk. Out of the folds of the drow's pibufui cloak shot the new weapon, straight for Drizzt's heart, the evil drow snarling in apparent victory. Drizzt spun to his right, backstepping out of harm's way. He brought his closest scimitar back across and down, hooking the dirk's hilt and pulling the drow's arm out straight. He completed his spin, putting his back tightly against his opponent's chest, wrapping the outstretched arm right around him. The drow tried to work his mace into an angle so that he could strike at Drizzt, but Drizzt was in a better position and was quicker. He stepped away, then came back in, elbow flying high to smash into his opponent's face, once, twice, and then again in rapid succession. Drizzt flung the drow's dirk hand out wide and wisely reversed his spin, getting Twinkle up just in time to catch the swinging mace. Drizzt's other arm shot forward, the hilt of his scimitar crushing the drow's face. The evil drow tried to hold his balance, and he was clearly dazed. A quick twist and snap of Twinkle sent the mace flying into the air, and Drizzt punched out with his left hand, Twinkle's hilt catching the drow on the side of the jaw and dropping him to the floor. Drizzt looked to the gnome shaman, who stood open-mouthed, clutching his hammer nervously. All around them, the fight had become a rout, with the revived elemental leading the Svirfnebli to a decisive victory. Two other gnomes joined the shaman and eyed Drizzt with suspicion and fear. Drizzt paused a moment to consider the Svirfneblin tongue, a language that used a melodic inflection similar to Cerberus English alongside the hard consonant sounds more typical of dwarvish talk. "I am no enemy," he said, and to prove his point he dropped his scimitars to the ground. The drow on the floor groaned. A gnome sprang upon him and lined his pickaxe up with the back of the dark elf's skull. "No!" Drizzt cried in protest, starting forward and bending low to intercept the strike. Drizzt stood up straight suddenly, though, as a searing flash of pain erupted along his backbone. He saw the gnome finish the dazed drow, but he couldn't begin to contemplate that brutal action as a series of minor explosions went off down his spine. The lip of some devious, flat-edged club ran down his vertebrae like a board snapping across the picket fence. Then it was over, and Driz stood motionless for what seemed like a very long time. He felt his legs tingle as though they'd gone to sleep, then felt nothing at all below his waist. He fought to hold his balance, but wobbled and fell, and lay scratching at the stone floor and trying to find his breath. He knew that the darkness of unconsciousness, or a deeper darkness still, was fast approaching, for he could hardly remember where he was or why he had come. He did hear the shaman, but that small flicker of consciousness that Drizzt had remaining was not comforted by the shaman's words.
"Kill him!"